Hi, and welcome to this episode where we're talking about a company that wants to bring AI to security planning, risk management, and compliance. Why would we do a thing like that? To put it bluntly, we don't like the term AI at all. It deflates the conversation, it confuses a whole bunch of very different things, and even saying AI these days immediately implies a cavalcade of monstrous shenanigans and bad ethics. There are, however, cases where people have been doing good research in applications where things like unsupervised learning, automated language processing, pattern recognition, and so on are doing actually very useful things and offer possible benefits. Not all products that use machine learning or advanced data processing algorithms are built within a framework of techno-fascist control freakery. We'll often meet guests who are very sincere and try to offer genuinely beneficial products, and we'd like to give those guests a voice to explain on a technical level what they're trying to do in a way that isn't soaked in deceptive marketing speak. As the cybersecurity crisis gets worse, and more government regulation puts pressure on organizations to meet compliance, a possible solution is to automate some of the system's analysis and make assisted recommendations to security managers like CISOs, who may not have the deeper technical skills. Whether this will make security better or worse remains to be seen. So we'll be talking to Dr. Basil Catt and Ryan Maruga about the idea of measuring security. Can it be quantified? And can it be used to suggest an optimally secure configuration for components? They believe that it can, and they've built a company called C-Core to try and automate security compliance. Hello, Basil.
Hello, Basil.
Hello, how are you doing?
Ryan. Ryan. Hi, Andy.
Are you in Norway?
In Norway, yeah. A small city north of Oslo, around an hour and a half.
Where would you work, Ryan?
We're based in London. We have a London office just by London Bridge. Basil is our founder. He's based in Norway. We met at the Threat Locker on
of course
the,
we did.
Sea event.
Yeah.
Wasn't that a lovely night on the boat with those lights? That
yeah.
was amazing.
It was a great time.
So C-Core, how do you like to pronounce that?
In Norway, we call it C-Core.
C-Core sounds kind of a bit more Octonauts. It's a bit more undersea and cool. Wasn't that the hacker group in sneakers? You might have unfortunately picked a namespace that...
There isn't a government on this planet that wouldn't kill us all for that.
Ryan, what's your role in the company?
I'm currently working as a business development manager, working in the GTM space. So we're really working on all different fronts, really just pushing our brand. Well, yeah, just going to market.
I was very impressed with the scope of what you tried to do in security metrics. I think, obviously, it's a really, really, really hard thing to measure. And I think that's what we want to talk about today. A lot of that stuff got abandoned, in a sense, in software engineering because people lost confidence in metrics, software engineering metrics, how to see whether or not code was any good based on its complexity and all those kinds of things. But now, for security, it's like that times 10. So I'd love to hear from you a bit more about what new technologies might give us confidence again in metrics, if that makes sense.
Actually, the concepts that we have for software engineering and software quality almost apply the same, but you know, with the different metrics, different perspectives, different measurements. But complexity, you mentioned complexity. Complexity is one of the main aspects that when you want to study the quality of the code from the security perspective is one of the aspects to be simple. So to be simple is to be secure. So if your software is a complex, the more possibility and likelihood that issues and vulnerabilities will appear. When we talk about metrics in security, very concrete things, things that are related to the number of bugs, the coverage of the tests. When you talk about now very concretely about software testing, like the coverage, the number of reported vulnerabilities, different tools that do check, so you get a lot of information.
We'd love to hear about those tools and about how they've developed over the years, what kind of problems they might be able to help us solve today. that kind of thing?
So yeah, a couple of things. So you do product comparing. So you compare different products to help with your security assurance. So I'd like to talk about how you do that. What we find, especially when we interview people, is that there's a tradition to sort of wine and dine a CISO and show them how great your product is, a big part of the old sales method. And the CISO will then probably buy your product at some point and may stick with them for life due to that friendship and that bond they build up. But it might not be the best product. And how does a new CISO even navigate that scenario, work out what's better for their system? So it's really good to have somewhere where you can go and actually compare those two things.
When it comes to comparing products, that's one of the scenarios or one of the cases that the tool can be used for. The tool is not like a technical testing tool, like static analysis or dynamic analysis tools that goes to the code and test things. The tool is more of a dashboard and the methodology behind the dashboard that kind of structured the evaluations and the metric that you want to test against and give you a very nice kind of overview and insights into the system that you evaluate. So I say evaluate, like not test. Test is more connected to a technical system, but to evaluate whether it's a technical system or an enterprise. When it comes to the comparing based on metrics, the core idea of the method that we develop is we want to measure the level of confidence that we have for a system. So there are two aspects. There are things that increase the confidence, the assurance, and things that will decrease. So what are the things that would increase the confidence? So the more, let's say, the more controls the system has, the more you are certain that those controls could detect, could prevent, could help securing the system. Controls are aspects that improve the level of confidence, the level of security. What are aspects that reduces the level of confidence? Vulnerabilities, or if you have vulnerabilities, the less you are certain about that particular system. So that's the main idea. The calculations or the metrics, the things that will improve the confidence and things that will decrease the confidence. We divide it into two. We call them the requirement metrics that are related to the controls, and we call it the vulnerability metrics that are related to the vulnerabilities. So we try to look into the system from both aspects. When it comes to requirement, it's quite typical exercise when you do tendering and etc. with a CISO. If they want to look into a particular system, they will say, okay, those are the list of requirements that we have. Let's say taken from particular standard, and they do the checklist. Okay, those are the things. Some might be checked, some others. And then when you compare, you just compare qualitatively saying, okay, this is the here, but this is there. But this might be a little bit more important than the other aspect, so etc. So what we do for those positive qualities, we add a weight. I want to weight more for that particular quality and a little bit less for that.
You're listening to The Cyber Show.
So then you have a list of requirements that you want to compare and the list of vulnerabilities that are also associated with the similar concept to the weight, which is a risk, right? So the more the risk, the vulnerability is more severe and will affect more the level of security. If you think like a matrix, so you have some good qualities, some bad qualities. Good qualities are associated with weights, bad qualities associated with risks. And then you do the evaluation over the two or three systems. And then you have measurements. You bring those measurements to this matrix. Then you have very nice way of looking into things quantitatively in this case, because we add measures for each of those quantities. And the good thing about it is not only that you see the different things, we do calculation of the final score, so the total score. So you can say, and you normally we kind of normalize to a number between 0 and 10. Then you can say the level of security or the level of assurance that you have for that particular system, let's say is 7 out of 10. The other one is 8 out of 10. So that's where you get this comparison.
Theoretically. Ah, a fellow scientist.
Yes, I'm I'm an academic and professor in information security in the last 20 years. The head of department of information security and communication technology at the Norwegian University of Science and Technology. NTNU, the Norwegian University of Science and Technology, is the largest university in Norway. Almost 150 staff members working on information security and communication technology. And I've been doing different things. So in my 20 years, theoretically modeling usage control policies.
So C-Core, we're mainly focused on SMEs. We understand SMEs they need to be compliant, but they don't have the budget to be able to spend on their security assurance products to make sure they align with their industry frameworks. So this is some of our main targets. What we've done with the quantitative security assurance, you made it very accessible for companies within this sector to be able to benchmark themselves against industry standards and make sure that they meet those standards as well through our platform. We're currently having AI as well implemented in our platform. It enables them to automate this whole testing process and again, saves them the time, and it's very economical for them as well.
Yeah, so you've a product with a dashboard on it with loads of different options that can help you understand your quality assurance, right? And understand your systems a little bit better so you can make the right security decisions.
That's correct, yes. So with the dashboard, very user intuitive. So you can clearly see exactly where the current vulnerabilities in their systems that are really damaging their security assurance, how they positively and negatively affect the security assurance score. So they can see that in the dashboard very clearly. And then what happens is from that report, they can generate a mitigation plan and it will show them exactly how much that will cost them so that they can implement that and they can see their score really boosted off the back of that assessment.
And you can tailor this product, right? So you can say, I'm using predominantly a Linux system or someone else is using it predominantly a Windows system. They can tailor that to either of their systems, or maybe they're using a mix like most of us do. Can you completely tailor those and plug in what you've got and maybe other software that you're using for security as well?
Yes. So what we do is we build your security assurance profile. So in that security assurance profile, we can see exactly what requirements you need to meet, how you need to mitigate against your vulnerabilities. And so we build your security assurance profile. And in that, we can see the different domains that you're going to be working in and the different systems, of course, that you'll be testing. And so we can really build that for you prior to actually doing that assessment for your platform.
And you're saying that you're building in AI into your program. We've had a lot of other companies that have said, we completely provide quality assurance. It's all based in AI. Is that possible at the moment? Can you base an entire dashboard completely on the output of AI? And is that safe to do so? What do you think about that?
So we're going to be doing automated testing, which is just going to be a game changer. So what that will do is it's going to automate the whole assessment for them. So they'll be able to generate their score, mitigation plan, full assessment. And why that's so powerful is because not only do we do something very new in our space, which is the quantitative security assurance and our methodology, which has been founded by years of research, peer reviewed, etc. So it's going to save them so much time in terms of the current methodologies in the space are very qualitative. So it requires a lot of paperwork and, we're getting more digitized as a society and economically. So companies don't want to be wasting as much time on doing their assessments. They want something that's very slick and very modern. And that's going to be able to be done for them on our platform.
You're listening to The Cyber Show.
Claiming that you use AI could do you a great disservice. And I think in the current, and I'll call it madness because it absolutely is, the stage of the hype cycle and possible bubble bursting and all the economic fallout from wasting money in really quite bizarre ways, the tragedy would be if good tools that people have been working on in academia for 40 years that are coming to fruition, and they happen to be coming to fruition at a time of economic desperation where the term AI become a liability and not a help. And that's why what I'd like to do is to explore more detail and depth in this episode about how this product works and what elements from machine learning, from expert systems, from multidimensional scaling and things like that you're actually using as a way to construct a matrix of confidences. Obviously, I'm very, very interested in where you get your data from and what that data is. But the algorithm to me sounds something a lot more well thought out than simply throwing a lot of crap at a large language model and hoping something useful sticks. So I've already heard you talking about ingesting documents and reading reports and things like that. So that's a kind of nice input processing side. I've heard you say that you've got that sort of human in the loop in the sense that you're writing reports, you're giving choices and views and mitigation plans to a CISO based on a good analysis of their system by your algorithm in a very expedient way, because this is where you make your buck, is by automating it.
So I can read text and then process it and give you a suggestion. I can provide suggestions based on, let's say, reports and other materials, other documents, other texts that are related to the organization. But I think it's not, we need to have a human in the loop. We use AI a lot to give recommendations, etc. But eventually someone needs to make the final decision. Without AI, you need to look into all different documents, look into the risk assessment, to the policy, and come up with these qualities. But with AI, they can look into the different documents and provide suggestions for those qualities. So that's the first step. Plus, the next step is when you have those qualities, which are high-level qualities, the AI will help you to ask the right questions. How can I ensure? What's evidence that is needed to make sure that this control is there? Or what technical test that I need to perform in order to make sure that this vulnerability doesn't exist? And that's the second step. So the AI will provide, based on the different sources of information, provide you with those high-level qualities. But the next step is to come up with the more concrete questions and test plans in order to run the evaluation. And of course, the third step or fourth step is to take the test plan, as I mentioned before, and plug like an automated, fully automated test engine that will perform the test plan automatically. As Ryan mentioned, our next step is to plug this kind of platform with automated testing engine using what's called the goal question matrix. So we refine it into more questions and etc. until we get to a concrete test plan. That is the test plan that will be evaluated. So the next step is to take that test plan and automated testing engine, perform the complete testing or evaluation automatically and give you the feedback. But I see the trend is going towards more and more automation and more autonomous agents doing things completely kind of and independently. It might come back to the AI. I think it's not there yet.
No. But you do hear, I mean, we spoke to a company up in Florida and they said, we're doing similar things. We're providing complete zero trust and we're doing everything in AI. And you just question that and you think, how? It's not there yet. The technology's not there yet. So it's interesting to see that you're using it in the right way. And that's the real ethical way, isn't it? Is to just cut down on a lot of the button clicking and the pushing and the moving around the mouse, because you just don't need to do it. It should just be automated. You know, you shouldn't have to keep running all of these tools. They can just run in the background, essentially.
The main use they will make of the solution is they see the library. They see all the different standards, which they may have to comply by depending upon their industry. They can, of course, come and benchmark against those standards. But I think what the key is the report page, the real intricate breakdown of their infrastructure based upon. So with our different standards in our library, there's control questions in there. And with those control questions, they're scored 0, 0.5 and 1. So it's 0 meaning it's failed, 0.5 meaning it's partially fulfilled, and 1 meaning fulfilled. So in the report, they'll get a full breakdown fully of their infrastructure based upon their assurance profile, and they'll be able to see exactly where their system is letting them down and where their system can be improved. So very, very tailored to their environment and exactly how the standards they're trying to meet.
It's a scoping tool in a sense as well, isn't it? It lets somebody do a recce of their own estate and figure out what's out there and what the risks might be. Let me just get a couple of things straight. Are you strictly B2B and operating software as a service on your own boxes? Is that how it's working?
So, yeah, we have kind of a software as a service in the cloud. So to our customers, they can log in and get access to the services that we have.
And you've done a lot of work on making this an easy-to-use, web-friendly product that kind of average CISO can get into.
So it depends from case to case. So Ryan mentioned the case where a customer needs to be compliant against a particular standard, then they need to have the standard, and the standard is quite clear with its requirements that needs to be fulfilled. Other case where, let's say, an organization that wants to do an evaluation, a security assurance evaluation for their systems, for their, let's say, governance, for their concrete deployment, they need to take into account not only a standard, they have different internal documents. They have their security policy, they have their different guidelines, they have their risk assessment reports for pen testing. So there are different sources of information that can come in. What is the thing that we should focus on? Right? So the standard will give you something quite fixed, list of requirements that you need to fulfill. Standards in a structured way, and also provides a way how you can evaluate the standards, the evidence. It gives you the evidence for fulfilling each of those requirements. But besides that, when you have different sources of information that are relevant for the organization to decide which qualities that I should look at, which requirements, which trends, which threats that are now relevant in my IoT system within the maritime security, right? So what I should look into, right? And at the same time, from my policy document and plus from the risk assessment reports in the last 2 years, what are the requirements? What are the controls that needs to be in place or that needs to be evaluated?
So I guess the product's very much useful for CISOs more so than our engineers, because they're the ones that are obviously having the umbrella view. They're managing a lot of different standards. And I guess when we think about standards, what we're thinking is mostly GDPR and ISO 27001. But there are so many more. I mean, if you're coming from an industrial background, you have a whole wealth of standards that you need to do. If you're doing something like nuclear power, you have a whole different aspect of industry standards that you need to apply to, as well as the two typical ones. So I just want to say, like, how would a CISO, once they start using that dashboard, really get on top with making sure that each control not only does the job that it needs to do, but you don't have conflicting controls or unnecessary controls or gaps in the system, which may lead to problems later on?
So there are different standards. And just I would have one comment regarding standards. So one of the features that C-Core is, I think, uniquely kind of provide is you can combine different standards within one security evaluation project. So now if you have, let's say, 2-3 standards, you are in the healthcare, so you need to have different, need to be compliant against the GDPR, against the European standards, but at the same time, you need to be also compliant against the national standards, and etc. So you really, like particularly in the critical sectors, there are different standards that you need to be compliant against. And one of the things that C-Core can provide is, because we have this concept, as I said, the core concept is the security assurance profiles, then you can create a profile that consists of different standards where potentially some of the requirements within the standards are overlapping. So you don't need to, let's say, one evidence can provide you, can check different kind of requirements with different, from different standards. If you can combine different standards within one assessment, that's something that can help a lot.
I guess what I often find is that you'll go for one standard, but you're already compliant to another standard that's actually got stronger controls. So does the software point out that actually this is the strongest control, and as a result, you're compliant to everything below that stack?
Exactly. Some of the standards, actually, they contradict. So like one standard that tells you that the password should be 8 characters. The other will tell you it should be maybe 15 characters. So that some standards might be included in other standards, but some might even be contradicting. When you run a security assurance evaluation, then you will see, okay, those are the areas where we are missing. Those are areas that we don't have maybe enough or not adequate. We don't have the control that should be in place, or the control is wrongly deployed, or it needs to be adjusted, etc. So these are things that we look at. As I mentioned before, we have the concept of a weight or importance. So taking that concept into account, it will also tell you those controls are quite important that you need to focus on first if you have, let's say, a limited budget.
Just to add on to what Basil was saying as well, so with that weighting, and when they get that report, they can see exactly how much their score will actually be boosted by. So again, it really helps with this is a budget allocation, as they now can allocate, let's spend a very good sum of money on this specific area because we know this is going to really boost our score.
So it's just cutting down on so much report reading and so many meetings that you'd be having with your staff to get these finite bits of detail. And it's really taking it all into one area where you can just start really focusing on how to actually solve the problem rather than talking about the problems in the first place.
You must have some mechanism for expressing those preferences. Let's hear a little bit more about that. I mean, different risk models are going to suit different customers, and for medical use or something different for military use or something for use in schools, whatever, you're going to want to tweak that. How can I tweak my analytical risk models?
The way it calculates the security assurance level is every different sector, they're going to have differing amount of security requirements and vulnerabilities. How the security assurance level is calculated is it aggregates all of that so that it fits between the score of 0 and 10. What that does basically is regardless of sector, it aggregates that into 0 to 10 using that methodology. So it's very clear to see how effective your security assurance is.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest issues actually that I see in that area is a learning curve. So a lot of people will say, well, we've had this new tool and it's in use, but we're actually only using 20% of it and we're not using it to the best of our advantage. And then we went out and we bought another tool to do the job for us instead. So how does this help with that? You know, is it something that you can solve with this sort of software?
The ability to compare tools as well is very useful with the product.
To understand the question right, Helen, we were talking about the learning curves.
But of the software itself, yeah. So one of the issues that we have is that, you know, someone will go out and buy a new software with a new dashboard and give it to their staff, give it to their new CISO and say, this is great, it'll save you loads of time. But what we see as well, when we speak to a lot of the software providers, is that what then happens is that the people who start using the tools often don't know how to use them entirely, you know, all aspects of that tool, use them correctly. And they often only use 20% of them and often end up with more tools than they need or more services than they need. Is it quite easy for CISOs to use this tool? And is there a way for them to say, I'm really struggling to use this, what do I do?
You are completely right. So there's different tools doing different things and overlapping sometimes, doing unique in one aspect and different on another. And the whole time you need to start from learning new tools, maybe learning new technologies, terminology that is used in these tools and et cetera. And that the same applies for C-Core, particularly because we come up with different types of metrics that look into different aspects of your system. Or let's say we have 3 controls that are missing and I have a budget of 100,000. Each control, let's say, costs 50,000. Now, where should I put the money? So then one of the metrics, one of the aspects that the tool will give you, it will tell you that if you invest 50,000 in that particular control, it will automatically calculate the amount of assurance that will be added to the current score, which means like you might put 100,000 and you increase the level of security from 7 to 7.5, but you could put, let's say, 70,000 or let's say 100,000 in a different way, but that the amount of the level of trust that you have on the system increases from 7 to 9.5. But this is something that we really take seriously. So we are a startup getting into the market. So this is something that we put an emphasis on, where the plan is to have a very user-friendly educational materials for a technical person, for a CISO, that they can get what they need in the kind of easiest way and in the fastest way.
It certainly looks really user-friendly when you go on your website and you see examples of it. It looks like a lot of the other tools that we're used to. There's a lot of graphs, there's a lot of mathematical data, and that really does help to understand what you're looking at rather than just junking it up with a lot of text data, and that's what you see with a lot of tools as well.
You're listening to The Cyber Show.
Helen, do you remember Blotto Front Analysis? Multiple attack, and it's a game theoretical, and you've got to allocate resources to multiple fronts. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do remember that. Yeah, totally.
Cool. I mean, this is a kind of constraint solving problem that's really, really big right now, and then really important, because like people's budgets have shrunk and the threats have grown. So yeah, the resource allocation suddenly really big. How much underneath tech that you're using, it in a game theoretical context, constraint, which of the ways do you see it, Basil, in your research? How have you approached this problem?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, there we did some investigations along the way, but we didn't use the game theoretical in finding our solutions and the optimal kind of mitigation and etc. We evaluated in the beginning, but we didn't use the game theory for that. So it was we tried to make it simpler way.
I'm now more curious about what the simpler way is and how you describe the core algorithm that's making the evaluations.
We go through all possible permutations and say, okay, if you do this and this and this, that will be the cost and that will be the increase based on the output that you have. We simply go through all different options. So in a sense, there's no optimal in the theoretical perspective, but you have the whole range of options in solving the security of your system.
So it's a kind of, there's local minimums and local maximums, but it's a multidimensional viewing tool.
Exactly.
Somebody who kind of knows what they're doing with those controls already, gets to play with them. Like, I'd love to imagine that they're on sliders or something like that, and you can just sort of look at a graph of how secure your system is while you play with these sliders. That would be great. The user must bring some security knowledge to that situation. This is not a tool that's going to wipe your ass for you. In whose hands would this tool work best?
The tool will be used by different people in different roles with different background and knowledge. Of course, if we think about the final dashboard, it's mostly used by CISOs and decision makers.
This is probably a new territory for you, and it's quite exciting. And I'm imagining that's a lot of telemetry feedback you need to really get. How is this sitting with those CISOs as decision makers and so on? And what level of skill? Because obviously a tool only makes sense in the context of it being embedded already within some process or structure that interprets it. And it's not going to just be a kind of, you know, cure-all for people that are lazy about their security. I mean, and that strengthens your case because, you know, ideologically, I'm an opponent of convenience. I think convenience is killing us, looking for shortcuts. So, how you pitch clever technology to people really counts how they use it. And it will require something of you. And I heard, Ryan, you talking about training. You know, I think that that's something that I hope that you're working on and can emphasize. Maybe you'd like to say more about that, about the help that people could get in using this.
Yes. So we really have put together, of course, some tutorials in terms of how to use the platform. But, just to have that hand-on experience, we have consultation with some of our team internally that's being set up. So when users are using the platform, really working at their level, as Basil spoke about, people are going to be viewing the platform, but at differing levels. So of course you have, as Basil spoke about, the CISOs and decision makers viewing the reports a lot more. But then in terms of like the standards and things like that, that might be other individuals as well within the organization. And so just showing them, again, overall how it works, you want to meet them exactly where they are and take them through the platform to ensure that they make the best use of it, again, for each of their specific functions as well.
If I were to use a product into which I basically did a recce of my entire system, my networks, my operating systems, my endpoints, their configuration, well, along with my appetite for risk and other details about things that I might have, cyber insurance, etc., I would be rather concerned about who had that data. That was a very, very juicy target indeed. So I'm going to ask you the question that, you know, no one wants to hear and no one wants to think about. What steps are you taking to secure that data as a software as a service provider? And are you thinking about anonymization, things like homomorphic operations or zero knowledge proofs, things that would allow you to know things about or for someone to share and divulge information about their system in a way that was not useful to attackers were the very unlikely event of C-Core themselves having a cybersecurity problem?
But that's an excellent question. Really, it's an excellent question, and particularly asking this question to a security service provider, that's quite important. What I should say on that, we use the technical measures for securing the data. Let's say we have like secure storage, we have like an authorization system in place, authentication system in place, three-factor authentication. And so we try to do our best when it comes to, let's say, securing, but particularly the point that you mentioned about that, like the sensitivity of the data and where, who can look into, etc. So my quick answer is we are doing according to the industrial standard, what others are doing, because we do evaluation of systems, right? So we know, and actually the first thing that I ask the team is, let's take what's called in the UK, so cyber essentials and then cyber essentials plus, and let's test our company there. And also let's take OWASP top 10 and OWASP CVSS, and let's do an evaluation of our system itself. So from that perspective, we fulfill, let's say, I consider that the minimum that we need to have based on those different standards from OWASP and from ISO and etc. and cyber essentials and stuff.
We do have security assurance experts inside our company internally to help.
I mean, when it comes to the concretely, like about the sensitivity and privacy, the privacy and or sensitivity of the of information, we don't have extra measures like zero proofs or we anonymize data. No, we don't do that. But we make sure that we secure the data that we have, like we have a strong access control and authorization. We try to do our best according to the industrial kind of standard, I would say.
That sounds like a very fair and honest response to the situation that we're all in. And I'm a big Bruce Schneier fan. I really love his data as a toxic asset. Don't hold it. Don't hang on to it. And so, you know, that assurance that you're kind of using it for the minimum necessary and also processing it as locally as possible. What we find, as a heads up for future design, is that there's this economic tension providing software as a service, in that you want to keep your intellectual property close to you and not make it a product that's out there. But what you have to do is you have to do that to a certain extent eventually, because the discerning security user wants to run it locally. They want to know it's doing on their boxes. So in the end, you kind of go back to a rather old-fashioned software model of, if you can, if that processing power is available for, you know, inference and stuff and solving locally, they need to buy a box running it on it. I won't press you on that anymore because it's everybody's nightmare. But yeah, don't hang on to the data.
Yeah, and exactly. And the point we are, yeah, couple of thoughts, like exactly as you mentioned, like to spawn your own, like, and then do all data that you want in your box and just destroy the box. For us, we don't gather information, like the sensitive information. For us, the important is the profiles. and the test plans, and those are our kind of main assets. But the user data and the results of the users and etc., what each user see in the dashboard is their own kind of asset, and we don't. So in general, we are not. We try to, as you mentioned, keep it as long as it's needed by the user, and when not, just destroy it.
Another kind of big challenge, I think, to all of this is the sheer pace of change and the rate at which the information, the risk landscape is changing. How can you cope with the accelerating pace of change in the security landscape? That's really my question.
That's a good point. The point is to be up to date. There's a lot of change, and the change is so fast. The different kind of legislations and acts from European Union, from the UK, from Norway, and from other countries. At the same time, supply chain attacks and also the whole geopolitical risk into account. So a lot of things change. So I see we are responsible to be up to date, to update our platform with the relevant standard for different sectors, for different organizations, when it comes to the different attacks and threats. And in the tax landscape, we need to be up to date when we create our vulnerability, like the security assurance profiles and the list of vulnerabilities. But the platform allows you to add different standards. So you are not fixed. I saw in the market, there are different like tools that are just ISO compliance kind of tool, right? So it's just for ISO. So, but our tool is kind of general. We are doing some research around NIS2 and how NIS2 and that's the relation with the different standard and the ISO and etc. So just plug NIS2 in your platform, and then you have NIS2 and you have the kind of the foundation to do like NIS2 evaluation in different countries, etc. So,
wow. We should call that a security compliance playground. That sounds actually fun.
That's a hard one too, making it fun.
Thank you so much for joining us, Basil and Ryan. And just before you go, can you please let our listeners know where they can find C-Core and buy this great product?
Fantastic. Yes. So C-Core, so you can learn more about our products, of course, by getting in contact with us. But our website is www.ccore.ai. So it has all the information on there and some of our methodologies on there as well about how we do what we do. You can obviously get in contact with us directly on LinkedIn. We have our LinkedIn page called C-Core Information Security. So you can get in contact with us on there and also via email. But my email personally would be r.marugo@c-core.ai.
Brilliant. Thank you so much for joining us. It's been a really great show.
Thank you very much for having us. Thank you. Have a nice weekend, guys. Then.
Thank you. You too. Have a fantastic weekend. Thanks so much for joining
us. Thank you. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.